Welcome to the Locked On Sooners Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Now, here's your host, John Hoover.
It is Locked On Sooners, your daily Oklahoma Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm John Hoover, and for the next 30 minutes, I am in your ear. It's Wednesday, December 4th. We do this every single day. You call yourself a Sooner fan, well, then you need to tell your friends, tell your family, heck, tell your two-toed sloth that you are Locked On Sooners. Again, I'm John Hoover from 107.7 The Franchise in Oklahoma City, 107.9 The Franchise Tulsa. I write columns and blogs at TheFranchiseOK.com, and I wrote one last night about why the College Football Playoff Selection Committee let an opportunity slip through its fingers. I also wrote a Big 12 championship game preview for SportingNews.com. You know what? Both of those websites are free, by the way. I'd recommend checking them out. My YouTube channel, I just posted last night's interviews with Bill Beedenbow, C.D. Lamb, Creed Humphrey, Lee Morris, and there's a bunch of other videos up there as well. I think the best way to keep up with all my content is just follow me on social media. On Twitter, I'm at John E. Hoover, and on Facebook, I'm at John E. Hoover Media. And you can follow Locked On Sooners, of course, on Twitter, at Locked On Sooners. It is Wednesday, so today we're going to hear a little more from Lincoln Riley. We'll hit on this week's Heisman Watch. You are going to want to stick around for my take on that. And today you get a press pass, this time with Colin Kennedy from 24/7 Sports. Okay, first things first. Oklahoma and Baylor get it on for the Big 12 Championship. Saturday morning, 11 a.m., Jerry World, Arlington, Texas. OU's number 6, Baylor's number 7. So it's a decent chance that if Georgia loses to LSU, that's later in the day, unfortunately, then the winner of the Big 12 title game gets the 4th playoff spot. Remember now, Utah plays Oregon on Friday night in the Pac-12 title game. So we could know a lot more based on what happens there. But if Utah wins and it's Baylor versus Utah, I would tend to think the playoff selection committee will go with Utah. They've had a slightly better game control, meaning they've blown out more teams on their crappy schedule than Baylor has. But if it's Oklahoma and Utah, I say OU gets the nod all the way because we are now talking about marketable brands. And that paperclip on the side of the helmet is going to bring television viewers and ratings way more than anything Utah can bring. Sorry, but that's just the way it works. Anyway, the Big 12 title game is on ABC, and OU opened as an 8.5-point favorite. Talked with Bill Beedenbow last night, and he made a very good point. As good as Baylor's defensive rankings have been this season, and they've been very good, just consider how much better they'd be if Baylor hadn't played 5 overtime periods this season. Yeah, 5 overtimes. 2 against Texas Tech, 3 against TCU. But, you know, it's also true that Baylor did put itself in that position to need those overtimes. If they hadn't mucked around with TCU and Tech and, you know, Iowa State and West Virginia, bad teams or teams with bad results this year, if they had just put those guys away, then Baylor would be the one right now, ranked number 5. That's what the committee means by game control. Although Rob Mullins told me they don't use game control as a metric, although I absolutely don't believe him. Yesterday we heard from Lincoln Riley, and we were unable to get to some of the good stuff at the end. So let's jump right into that right now.
What, if anything, impressed you most about Charlie Brewer? The first time you guys played him, what have you seen since then that concerns you going into this weekend?
I think he's a really tough kid. On top of being obviously very talented player, but I think real tough kid. Seeing him get hit a lot and gets back up. So I think brings toughness to the position, which I think is always a huge key at that position. And then I think he's developed. I mean, he's grown through the years and he's throwing the ball well. He's an athletic guy back there, a competitor. Comes from a great line of really, really good quarterbacks, as we all know. So he's done a tremendous job leading the team.
You guys had a lot of success with the play the other night, pulling the guard and the tackle. I'm just wondering, and I know you don't like to get into strategy stuff much, but can you quantify how difficult something like that is from a precision standpoint, especially when you have a new offensive line who haven't played together, and a guy like RJ who hadn't been with these guys at all until the summer?
Yeah, it's extremely difficult. It's you could sit up here for hours just talking about that one play. I mean, it is. It's tough, but that, you know, it's been a good play for us over the last few years, and we've worked hard at it. It's something that we're pretty bought in with. It's not one of those plays you can just halfway do. You're either all in or not. I could use the Mike Leach bacon, chicken, egg thing right there, but I'll stay away from that. only one can do that. But not yet. It's been a successful play for us. Our backs have done well, and this young O-line's getting better at it.
Is that something that you weren't able to do as much earlier in the season because of that? Is that line coming together?
I wouldn't say that. I don't know that I would go that far. Just, you know, week to week kind of changes for us, you know, as we grow and evolve. But it was good for us the other night.
Barry Trammell?
Yeah, Lincoln, on the Basquin play, I think it was second and goal from the four.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the game, on the other end, on the first and goal from the four, you ran a reverse with CD. How much of that is just thinking, let's get in the end zone any way we can, and we think we can do it here? And how much of that is just screwing with Baylor, getting in stuff? Because it seemed like if you hand the ball to Kennedy Brooks a couple of times, you're going to get in the end zone.
Yeah. Nothing. Nothing for Baylor or any other future opponents. I mean, just in that moment, just trying to win, trying to just do simply what you think is best. And we've, you know, with the way we've been running the ball, it's exciting because we, you know, we've been able to do some good things. Launch scrimmage, backs are running well, and then we still got some exciting guys on the perimeter that can make you pay too. So reverse should have scored too. I screwed up and had Rambo blocked the wrong guy. But, I just don't ever want people to be able to tee off on us, you know, and so that's we try to be, you know, multiple here and there, and thought we had some good opportunities at it the other night.
I don't know if you call it the Philly special, but
they call it the Sooner special.
Yeah, but is that a play that works particularly on the goal line? Is that something you could try at the 50 and it would do reasonably well?
Yeah, we threw one to Jalen, I think, a little bit further out against Kansas maybe this year, you know. So yeah, I mean, it just, you know, plays like that, there's so much to it. I mean, your skill set, you know, what they do defensively, the timing, I mean, there's a lot that's got to be right for those to work. So like everybody says, when they work they look great, when they don't they look like a disaster. So there's normally no middle ground with those. There's no dirty 3-yard gains on those. It's awesome or awful.
Playing in these championship games are starting to feel more regular for you guys, which is obviously a good thing. But does the mindset, is it a little different this year? Because you guys were kind of how Baylor is coming into this one, losing the regular season contest last year, and then getting the upper hand, winning it in the championship. Does the mindset change a little bit for you guys at all this year heading in, knowing that you took that regular season contest?
I don't think so. I mean, the year before we had beaten TCU here, and then, you know, then played them again, and so we've been on both sides. And I don't remember last year feeling much different because of that. Even the lead up to the game against Texas last year, there wasn't a whole lot of talk about, you know, the first one. It was just trying to focus on just playing our best ball, and then trusting in the end that would be enough. And so I think that's key. I mean, I think. Again, it is a new game. It's a different game, and there'll be different bounces of the ball. It'll unfold differently, and you just got to be ready to go play your best.
Coach, Boogie Radley Hiles appears to have just gained by leaps and bounds. Can you explain why? I assume some's the coaching, some's him.
Yeah, combination of all. It developed physically. The offseason was really good for him. You know, Coach Grinch has done a great job with him. You know, he's really fit into what we're doing and responded to the way that Alex has coached him. And then I think some of it is just growing up, maturing, going through. You know, he had a lot of great moments for us last year, had a lot of tough moments for us last year. When you play a freshman as much as he played last year, that's normally going to be the case. And he's grown from it. He's learned. You know, he's got a much better feel, I think, for what it takes to be a really good player at this level, and the fine line between looking great and looking very average, and just how hard it is each and every day, and you got to have that appreciation. And a lot of times the best way for him to learn that is to go through some growing pains. So he's come out of it well and played well the majority of the season and really had a good stretch here the last several games.
Thinking that some coaches that would not – play poorly, they don't look at the tape, they just let it lie. Did you watch the first half of the Baylor game any differently, knowing you were probably going to play him again? Or did it matter at all?
No, yeah, I mean, no, it does. I don't think we really treated it any different because there was so much at that point after watching, you know, after the game and watching as a staff and watching it with the guys, there was so much to learn from it of, you know, things under our control that we did very poorly that we did, you know, better in the second half. So, I think every coach has been through one of those, you know, a couple of those in their career where they just trash it. I can think of one or two off the top of my head. There was a lot to learn from, and that team, our team, needed to learn a lot then, and there will still be a lot we can learn from it now.
How big of a weapon has breakage become for you? I mean, he hasn't missed yet, so that should be a huge weapon going into this game.
Yeah, we got confidence in him for sure. It's real impressive the other night, you know, kicking in those conditions, and those were important field goals. He's equally as good on kickoffs the other night too. So now his development's been key to, you know, our special teams play, field position, scoring. I mean, he's a very important player right now.
Last one, John Hoover.
Yeah, follow up then on what you said about Jalen. You gave credit to your staff for being adaptable. How about yourself? That's not something that you've ever had in the toy box before. You know, a 1,200-yard rushing quarterback. How has that changed you as a play caller and as a offensive coordinator, play designer?
That's been fun. You know, it's different, but I mean, every year is a little different. You know, your skill sets are always different. People always want to put a point to the quarterback, but it's just, you know, you got to be able to look at the 11 guys you're going to put out there and, you know, how do you think you can create advantages for yourself? And that's, you know, we got a group in there that enjoys doing that, and you know, we certainly have got a base system and concepts that we're very committed to, but we also want to have the ability to branch out and do what our people do well and do things that give other people trouble. And it's been fun. I mean, it's been different, but a lot of fun, and hopefully the best is yet to come.
Up next on the Locked On Sooners podcast, it's Wednesday, so we have to take one final look at the Heisman Watch. Yeah, that's it. It's closing up. The voting is open currently. The actual official Heisman voting is currently open, and the votes are due next Monday afternoon. I mean, that came kind of fast for me, but listen, Joe Burrow's going to win. The real questions this year are, does Jalen Hurts get runner-up? Does Chuba Hubbard get an invitation to New York? And really, Ohio State's been so outstanding. How many Ohio State guys actually get to make the trip to New York as a finalist, and which one finishes the highest? And then in the final segment, I sit down with Colin Kennedy of 24/7 Sports and OU Insider for this week's Press Pass segment. All that's next on the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Before we get to the Heisman Watch, I've got a couple news and notes.
Sooner basketball.
OU travels to North Texas on Thursday night. For all you fans in the DFW, that's a short drive, isn't it? You ought to go. OU's 6-1. Like I've said before, they're fun to watch. North Texas is 3-5. Tip-off is 7 o'clock at the Super Pit in Denton, Texas. Dude, I'd go just to say I sat in the Super Pit. The OU women are on the road tonight, Wednesday, to face Western Kentucky. That game starts at 6 p.m., and you can watch it online if you have ESPN+. OU goes into tonight with a 4-3 record. Taylor Robertson was the Big 12 Player of the Week after scoring 21 against Abilene Christian and 30 against Wichita State. She's currently the NCAA's active career leader in three-point field goal percentage at 48.8%, and she's shooting 53% so far this season. I mean, wow, how cool is that? OU has a home game Saturday now against LSU at 3 o'clock.
Around campus.
The OU volleyball team plays in the NCAA tournament Thursday at 4:30 p.m. against Rice. That's down in College Station, Texas A&M at Reed Arena. The winner moves on to the second round to face the winner of number 13 Texas A&M and St. John's Friday. That second round match would be at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. It's OU's first NCAA tournament appearance since 2014, and it's 12th. In school history. Okay, you ready for some football?
Heisman Watch.
Sooner fans, I think you got a little bit of a dilemma. I mean, not really, but let me lay it out for you. You all want Jalen Hurts to win OU's third straight Heisman Trophy, right? Well, it's going to take obviously, first of all, just a massive performance by Jalen against Baylor on Saturday. But really, more than that, you're going to need LSU quarterback Joe Burrow to absolutely fall on his face. Like, I mean, like five interceptions and a 35-7 loss to Georgia in the SEC championship game. Only problem is, and this one's a doozy, that means Georgia would be in the playoff and Oklahoma would not. Anyway, I think the Heisman is currently a lost cause. The voting for this year's Heisman opened up on Monday, and I actually know some voters in Oklahoma who have already sent in their ballots. It's Wednesday. You've got till next Monday to get your ballots in, meaning many have already voted for Joe Burrow, and I know some have probably already voted for Jalen Hurts. With a game left to play, I know, it's stupid. You've got until next Monday, like 4:30 in the afternoon. You know, the game's in Saturday evening, and you've got till next Monday. And all the top contenders still have a game to play. And you're going to send in your ballot before they're even done playing? Listen, I tell my voters in Oklahoma to be conscientious and to, above all, vote, vote, vote. If they don't vote, I replace them right away. So we've had a perfect record in Oklahoma for a long time now. But I also try to remind them to wait till the games are played. I mean, I heard last year, before kickoff of the OU-Texas championship game in Arlington, a guy came up to me and said, I already sent my Heisman vote in. I said, why? Why would you do that? And I've already heard that this year. I don't count the conference championship games. Why? It is a real game. I mean, sorry, guys. I like y'all, but it's just not very smart. So with one game to go, let's see how everybody stacks up in the Heisman watch. USA Today polls 21 writers, and all 21 voted for Joe Burrow this week. Now, these are, keep in mind, these are all unofficial. These are just a straw poll. Hey, if I had a Heisman vote, here's who I would vote for. Unofficially, I do have a Heisman vote. Here's how I might vote this week kind of thing. You know, they're not official exit polls, but they are straw polls. Joe Burrow right now from USA Today has 63 total points. Again, all 21 first place votes. But they do have Jalen Hurts in second place with 31 points. Justin Fields is third with 20. Chase Young is fourth with 8 points. J.K. Dobbins is fifth with 2 points. And Jonathan Taylor has sixth with 1 point. So, no Chuba Hubbard. ESPN.com polls 10 writers, and 9 of the 10 voted for Burrow this week. Again, all unofficial. They rank 5 players here, so Burrow's got 49 points. Justin Fields is second with 30 points. Chase Young is third with 26 points. And Jalen Hurts, all the way down at fourth, with 23 points. Jonathan Taylor's fifth with 8. Chuba Hubbard is sixth with 6 points. Trevor Lawrence popped up this week at 7th. J.K. Dobbins is 8th. And Utah quarterback Tyler Huntley got 1 point. And The Athletic polls 51 riders. And Burrow got 50 of the 51 first place votes. He's got 152 voting points. I'm telling you, it's going to be a runaway. If he blows Georgia's doors off like we all expect, he might actually set a record for the biggest Heisman margin. Justin Fields is currently 2nd at The Athletic with 61 points. Chase Young, the defensive end at Ohio State, third with 37. Jalen Hurts is fourth here with 27 points, and J.K. Dobbins is fifth with 14. Jonathan Taylor, Derek Brown, Chuba Hubbard, and Tyler Huntley all got a handful of votes. Let me just say this about Chase Young. This has been bothering me since last Saturday. Is he the best defensive lineman in the country? Absolutely. Hell yes. No doubt about it. I voted him for my defensive player of the year. Is he the best overall player in the country? Yeah, I think probably so. He's going to be probably the number one overall pick. So, yeah, the guy's talent is incredible, and it definitely shows out. But is he, quote-unquote, the most outstanding college football player in the country? I say absolutely, positively not. He is not. Not to the extent that he should win the Heisman Trophy. I'm going to tell you why. At Michigan on Saturday, Chase Young had exactly 0 quarterback sacks, 0 tackles for loss, 0 tackles of any kind. He did have 2 quarterback hurries now. You know what a quarterback hurry is? It's when the quarterback throws the football right before you get to him, so you're late. Ooh, and you know what? He actually had one of those quarterback hurries in the first half when it was still a ball game. And you're telling me that's the most outstanding player in the country? Oh, Hoover, you're stupid. You don't know football. You're just a ball watcher, a stat chaser. You don't understand that Chase Young got double-teamed on every play and that Michigan schemed the offense to go away from him, and he was still a factor even though he didn't actually do anything. Against your rival in the biggest game of the year. Just stop. Just stop. Guys, the most outstanding college football player in America doesn't play an entire game and have 0 stats, okay? The most outstanding college football player in America doesn't get taken off the field, basically, because some coordinator schemed him out of the game. If that's true, if that's even possible to do, if it's even remotely fathomable, then why don't you see defensive coordinators scheming Joe Burrow out of the game, or Jalen Hurts, or Justin Fields, or J.K. Dobbins, or Chuba Hubbard? Let me be clear here. The most outstanding player in college football is outstanding because he can take over games and he actually dictates who wins the game. That's why it's become a quarterback award. That's why running backs who can't be stopped, like Derrick Henry, who play on championship teams, can still win the award. I have the football, now do something about it. That's what's outstanding. The objective of football, guys, is to win the game by putting the football across the goal line more times than your opponent does. The object of the game is not to be so quote-unquote threatening that the other team can just take you completely off the field with a good left tackle and a fullback. I'm sorry, but it's not. Most plays, Chase Young has one guy. Many times he's got two guys. Sometimes he's even got three guys trying to stop him from doing what he does best, which is hit the quarterback. Guess what? Joe Burrow and Jalen Hurts and Justin Fields and Chuba Hubbard and Jonathan Taylor, they've got 11 guys trying to stop them. Hey, if you want to cast a Heisman ballot, ask yourself this one question. Who wins the football game and why? Now that I got that off my chest, up next on the Locked On Sooners podcast, it is the Press Pass with Colin Kennedy from 24/7 Sports and OU Insider. That is coming up next on the Locked On Sooners podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And we're back on the Locked On Sooners podcast. It is my favorite segment of the week because it's the segment of the week where I get to interview another member of the OU Press Corps.
The Press Pass.
Joining us this week, it's Colin Kennedy, OUinsider.com, 24/7 Sports, and CBS Digital. The guy does a little bit of everything. Colin, thanks for joining us.
Well, appreciate you having me, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, fun stuff for sure. This podcast is a lively deal, and this is my favorite segment of the week. Just because, I mean, I could say Ask Hoover, but it's all about me. And I could say Ask Blinken Riley, but that's kind of a lighthearted. This is about the media business. This is about
breaking it down.
Your insight, your perspective,
yeah,
as well as mine. And so I want to get that from you. The Bedlam game Saturday night.
Yeah.
Your thoughts on how Oklahoma performed, why maybe Oklahoma State looked like it was fighting a little bit of a – with one hand tied behind its back with no Tylan Wallace, no Spencer Sanders.
Yeah.
You see them gang up and gang up on and shut down Chuba Hubbard. Oklahoma, I thought, played maybe its most complete game of the season.
Yeah, I agree. And against a very good offense, specifically an offensive line that I thought was kind of going overlooked in this game. Obviously, Chuba Hubbard is an outstanding running back. And to me, he deserves at least a shot to be New York. But at the same time, Oklahoma State is one of the best zone blocking scheme fronts, not only in the Big 12, but maybe in the nation. And so, yeah, having an offensive line like that combined with a running back is quite a tall task, but what Oklahoma was able to put together defensively was honestly impressive, and I agree with you. It was one of the more complete performances I thought they put together, not only because of what the front seven was able to do. I thought they've played honestly phenomenal over the past few weeks, but I was really impressed with the way the defensive back stepped up. If that team was going to get the job done in Stillwater, those DBs had to make some plays in the run game, and they did. I mean, Buki led the team in tackles, if I remember correctly.
Career high.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the main reasons why that this group's coming together so well. And so, to me, you go up against a zone-blocking scheme front, which is very hard to defend, but no one really wants to acknowledge it. And then one of the best running backs, if not the best running back in the Big 12 and the country, I was very impressed with what Oklahoma was able to do defensively. And offensively, I mean, what else can you say? They're methodical. They're driving down the field in 11, 12-play drives, and it just looks easy at some points. And I was very, very encouraged to see that this new identity offensive unit for Oklahoma, it just seems really comfortable doing what they're now able to do.
The long drives are interesting to me because Lincoln Riley's MO has always been bam, 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 down the field, quick as you can, tempo, tempo, tempo. He is so evolved as a coach. When you think about his 2 years as offensive coordinator here and his first year, year and a half, 2 years as the head coach, score as quick as we can, get back on the field as quick as we can. No thought whatsoever to what the defensive guys are going through. Now he's taking his time between plays. He's using his timeouts, when he should, which that's never been a problem for him. But you don't have to burn him on defense anymore, right? Because the defense knows what it's doing.
And Lincoln Riley, tempo-wise, I mean, at some point they've run 59 offensive plays this year. 45, I think, was one of the play total calls this year. Just remarkable. And he's doing it on purpose. I've said this before. He's actually helping the defense out, which when we talked to him through maybe last year, I think his comment was, yeah, I never used to think about the defense. I used to just think about how fast we could score. It wasn't my problem. He said, now it's my problem. And he's taken care of it. It's been impressive to watch him evolve as a coach, play calling wise.
Yeah, I mean, he's a young guy like me, if you will. So I know a lot of people in the younger generation of football like to see the fireworks and the flashy scores. But at the same time, I'm sure Alex Grinch is certainly appreciating this newfound Oklahoma offensive identity. And I think at the end of it all, we have to acknowledge the fact that it's this kind of offensive system combined with the complementary football that they're helping out defensively that's going to help them win games in the postseason. And that's how you beat teams that may be just a little bit better than you. If you are outmatched talent-wise, you have to consume the clock and you have to be able to rest your defensive squad. And now that Oklahoma's found that out, now that Lincoln Riley's matured a lot as a play caller, like you're mentioning, I think that's only going to benefit them in the long run. If they have the opportunity to make the college football playoff, I think that this squad may have just as good, if not a better chance to contend with some of those other teams than they've had in the past few seasons.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said on the Franchise Morning Show as I'm driving into Bill Snyder Family Stadium back on October 26th. I was telling Mike Steele and the guys, I think this Oklahoma team is equipped to play in a college football playoff and beat an LSU or an Alabama or an Ohio State. Then the K-State game happened, and it's been a roller coaster ride ever since. And I think what we saw Saturday night in Stillwater was a little bit getting back to that, more of a four-quarter game, controlling the game, not losing control for stretches of the game that we'd seen the previous month.
Yeah, and the biggest thing here is they've mentioned it a couple of times this season. Complementary football is so important to this squad. I believe it was after the UCLA game early in the season that Lincoln Riley said that was the first time he really felt like this group was coming together in all three facets of the game. Now, that hasn't always been the case, but now I think you're really seeing it, and the highlight of that moment did come in Stillwater. I think the defense has probably been the unit that's played more four-quarter football over the past few weeks. But now that this offense is coming around and they're starting to rely on guys that can go four quarters like a Kennedy Brooks, I think, again, like to your point and what we're talking about here, you really think about it, this group is structured to play against and potentially beat teams like LSU, Ohio State. While they may be outmatched talent-wise, I still believe they have a fighting chance if they were to make the playoff.
Yeah. Now, up next for Oklahoma is Baylor. It's the Big 12 championship game. Get this. Oh, the Big 12's been around 24 years. OU's won 12 Big 12 championships. This would be 13 out of 25 if they win this thing.
Yeah.
What? That's sick. That's ridiculous. Now, my tendency, and I asked this question at the press conference. We're recording this, as usual, on Monday. This segment plays on Wednesday's podcast. But I asked today at the press conference two different times, how do you fight against overanalyzing what happened in that first game just 2 weeks ago? What do you think the answer is there? What do you think that Oklahoma does? Because that was one of those games. The first half was trash. The second half was treasure.
Yeah, it's really difficult. And I think the best way to go about this, I was asked a similar question. Do you treat it as if Baylor's the team that Oklahoma saw in the first half, the second half, or do you just call it a clean slate?
Yeah.
Just my personal opinion, you got to treat Baylor like it's that first half squad. I mean, you have to go into this game with a chip on your shoulder. If you go in here thinking clean slate or second half, I don't know that you bring the edge that you have to have on this championship stage if you're Oklahoma. So, look, Baylor's been a really good football team, especially over the past few weeks, early on in the year. Obviously, they squeaked out some ball games, but ever since then, we talk a lot about Oklahoma and what they've done defensively, how they've looked pretty solid. Baylor looks pretty good, too, coming off a pretty convincing win over Kansas. And I know it's Kansas, but you got to take care of business. So I think you go into this one, you have to acknowledge what went wrong in that first half and motivate these guys. Because I don't think this is a group that's going to get too down on themselves. I mean, we talk a lot about the business-like nature of guys like Jalen Hurts, Kenneth Murray, CeeDee Lamb. I mean, you add fuel to their fire, and it's only going to pay off in the long run, I think. So I'm excited to see it. I think you do approach it as – look, these guys kicked our tail in the first half. You cannot let that happen again. You send that message, I think it will be received, and Oklahoma has a great chance to get the five-peat done which is unbelievable to me, man.
That's just shocking. In today's college football, where scholarship limitations and recruiting and parity and all, everything that's in place, all the structures that are in place to prevent dynasties, and you've got Oklahoma going for its fifth straight Big 12 championship.
Unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Remarkable. And not just that, but a coaching change, right? I mean, going from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley. So
yeah.
The dynasty continues. He is Colin Kennedy, OUinsider.com, 24/7 Sports, CBS Digital. If you recognize his voice or if you recognize his words, because he's so well-spoken, you might recognize him from – he's a former Sooner Sports Pad guy.
Yep.
I love the Sooner Sports Pad. You guys do an amazing job with that, putting it out there and getting the young people some exposure. He also used to be on OU Nightly.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in Louisville, Texas, right?
Yep, just outside of Denton.
Yeah, you're going to be basically going home this week.
Yep.
Right?
I went to Flower Mound Marcus because of the zoning
okay.
issue. It's very weird how it works.
You're not
down
a farmer.
There. I'm not a farmer, which is kind of good, honestly. But Marcus Marauder through and through. So they just lost in the playoffs. Pretty big bummer. But.
Very good. Tell me about the way you cover OU. That's what I like to ask, whether it's Cliff Brunt from the Associated Press or Keegan Renault for USA Today, Sooner Sports Wire. What is your role? How do you approach your coverage of OU sports?
I go from a multimedia perspective, coming from a television background and then kind of going along with the world of technology and production. I think I really love highlighting moments and showcasing what things mean to people without words, if that makes sense. So pictures, videos, that's what I have a true passion for. And then I just like telling stories and elaborating on things that I'm passionate about. And so a lot of that goes into analysis of the football game, which I do a lot of production for 24/7 Sports, or if it is writing, I do a lot of writing. But then, you know, you just got to go about it and highlight things in different ways. I do a lot of recruiting work as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've been down in Arlington at the Texas High School Football Playoffs the past 2 or 3 weeks, and that's always interesting. The world of recruiting is just a whirlwind. And so that's the way I go about it, is I'm constantly bouncing back and forth, but if I can highlight a moment for someone, that's what I'm really passionate about, I would say.
How can people follow your work?
Hit me up on my personal Twitter account, at ColinKennedy15, if you want to interact with me personally, or if you want to go check us out, OUinsider.com on 24/7 Sports. Hit us up on Twitter, at OU247, and our Facebook page, Oklahoma Sooners on 24/7 Sports, has a community of over 300,000-plus Sooners fans, so it's a great place to be. And I'm always here to help out in any way I can.
Seems like a lot. Tell them about this podcast if you get a chance, would you?
Yes, I will, absolutely. It'll be a nice little plug for you.
Absolutely. Colin, thanks, man.
Appreciate you, John.
That's it for today's show. Locked On Sooners will be back tomorrow, and we'll get into Baylor. I'll give you my watch list, 3 Sooners to watch on Saturday, 3 Bears to watch. And, of course, Blinken Riley joins us for his usual Thursday segment. Should be a lot of fun. The Locked On Sooners podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm John Hoover, and you can follow me on Twitter at John E. Hoover, on Facebook at John E. Hoover Media, on YouTube at John Hoover. Find all my columns, stories, blogs, and more at TheFranchiseOK.com. And don't forget to follow the Locked On Sooners podcast on Twitter at Locked On Sooners. Hit that subscribe button, share your Locked On Sooners podcast with your friends, and I would really love it if you left me a comment or a rating. Thanks for listening. See you guys.